Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Thursday, December the 9th, 2021. And today my guest is a returning guest, Dan Mazzola, who is a financial planner, tax preparer, CPA, all things financial, I would say. Actually, I think all roads lead to Dan when it comes to good advice on financing. But more on that in a second. Last week, I introduced Dan in a discussion about U.S. Social Security. And certainly Dan has helped me understand how important Social Security, or I suppose the equivalent in Canada Pension Plan, what have you, is important in a financial planning program. And this week, we are going to be talking about investing in general. And before we start, I'd like to actually tell you why I think this is particularly important, well, for everybody, but especially for Americans abroad. Americans abroad are well aware of all of the impediments to their investing for retirement, and that because of the punitive provisions in the U.S. tax code. And as somebody who helps people with expatriation, I've heard the story time and time again. People say, well, you know, I feel I have to renounce U.S. citizenship so that I can engage in responsible financial planning. And, you know, there's an element of truth in that. But what is clear is that many Americans abroad actually, courtesy of these tax rules, feel completely disabled from financial planning investing, and they don't do it at all. And I am convinced that that is the single biggest mistake they make, and that there are plenty of workarounds. And I'd like to welcome Dan back today, where we're going to be talking about personal investing in that and, you know, what I think some of the biggest impediments are, and probably, at least because they're easy to identify, possibly the easiest impediments to cure. So welcome, Dan. How are you today?
Very well, John. Thank you very much for having me back.
All right. Well, you know, I looked through your presentation, and again, I love your stuff. You are an oracle of common sense. Etc. Although I always worry that, you know, that these things that are so commonsensical may be too simple for the average mind. So let's get into this. I mean, you and I would agree that responsible financial planning is, I think, an important personal responsibility to yourself, to your family, to your country, you know, etc.
I would agree.
People have a lot of trouble with that. Let's talk about that.
I found that people tend to make a lot of mistakes when it comes to their investing, and little things that they could eliminate. And one of the examples that I use is that people tend to make decisions based on emotion rather than reasoning. And you're seeing a lot of things these days with all the stuff that goes on in advertising and social media, and they're not really thinking rationally. They think based on emotions, and a lot of them make their decisions based on emotions rather than rational thinking. So one of the things I talk about in my presentation is just different biases and errors in judgment that people make that lead to being poor investors or not the investors that they could be.
Well, and I think that, you know, not being the investors they could be, and I've got to tell you, by the way, that I have lived all of the mistakes that we're going to talk about. Okay, so I take personal responsibility for my own mistakes, but I certainly hope that, you know, it's so clear to me in hindsight their mistakes that I hope people can learn from them. But, you know, the single biggest mistake is when I'm thinking about the Americans abroad, well, I won't invest at all, or I can't invest at all. And, geez. If you're not investing, it seems awfully difficult to be a successful investor, wouldn't you think?
Right. And you're kind of limiting yourself to very, very poor returns on keeping the money in the bank or in cash or something like that. So you're really not helping yourself or your family, or especially if you are saving for retirement, having the money in cash is not going to help at all. You know, you have to kind of think of things in long term, and having the money in the bank while being maybe the safe thing to do is not going to be the productive thing to do over a long period of time, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, that kind of thing. One of the things we try to get people to think about when they start with us is think of it as a long-term investment And even if it's just for your retirement, you have to think about other people that maybe you might be leaving that money to. So it's not a question of just for your sake, but as you mentioned, for your family's sake.
So the goal, you know, we talk about just a visualizing this leaving money in the bank, that sort of thing, which, you know, I suppose we all do. It's just a question of degree. But the problem with that is that there's no real way to use that money to generate income, right? I mean, it really just becomes sort of, I have money there, and at some point in life, I'll dissipate that money by kind of spending it, right? You know, if you're not getting a return on it.
Sure, sure. But that's not helping you. Again, in the long term, it's not helping you being that conservative. And again, you have to think 5 years, 10 years, if you leave the money in the bank, you're not considering inflation for starters. And inflation this year is a perfect example where it's really kicked up. So having your money in the bank is actually a losing proposition in the sense that you're not keeping pace with the inflation. And that's only going to get worse, I think, in the short term anyway. So not doing anything is more harmful than maybe people realize, in the sense that you're keeping your money safe, but at the same time, you're not keeping pace with inflation. Over the long term, that's just going to get worse and worse, erode the value of your money. So there, I think there are very, very, very harmful effects to just sitting there and doing nothing.
Oh, and there certainly are. And you know what? There's always this waiting till a better time in the market, or the market's high, or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's interesting. It's harder to get people to invest in the market when it's high than when it's low. I mean, that's my experience with people, as irrational as that sounds. But, you know, the late, great Sir John Templeton, you know, I used to go, Templeton Mutual Fund, I think, was formed in Toronto. Anyway, the annual meeting was in Toronto for years and years. And I used to go to the annual meetings. There were thousands of people, and listen to Sir John Templeton talk about it. It was always the most interesting thing. And, you know, he was always very honest. Said, you know, we can't time the markets. And, you know, then somebody asked him about the effective exchange rates. And he said, well, you know, we know that they go up and down, but we've never been able to figure them out. You know, and then he just said, you know, the best time to invest is when you have the money to do so. And I think that, again, perhaps too simple for the average mind, but, you know, that's what people have got to do on this. And I have sort of reached the conclusion that the problem with investing has almost nothing to do with the investment, but everything to do with the individual investor, the mind of the investor. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. Most people, you know, if their behaviors or, I forget the quote, I know it was one of the Warren Buffett's or one of those, you know, very wise investors, very successful investors, said people's behavior is the biggest detriment. And if they kind of would control their urges to get in and out, time the market, things like that, they would be much better. So no, I think investment behavior is the primary determinant to somebody's success, more than the choice of what they're doing, what they're buying, that kind of thing. Behavior more than anything else is the most important thing.
Well, one of your slides here, you know, quoting the great Benjamin Graham, what was the title of his book? Was it The Intelligent Investor?
Yep, that was him. And that's, again, that was Warren Buffett's mentor, teacher, in the sense that most people are familiar with Warren Buffett, not so much by Benjamin Graham, but that's pretty much where he got all his stuff from.
Well, Warren Buffett, I think, you know, one of his quotes was, my favorite holding period is forever.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, he's certainly not concerned with, you know, turning this stuff over. But you have a quote here from Benjamin Graham in your presentation. The investor's chief problem, and even his own worst enemy, is likely to be himself. And I think that is absolutely the case. You know, and you've also got another slide, Words to Invest By. I think these sound more like yours than Benjamin Graham's. But we've got here, investing should be like watching paint dry. If you want excitement, take $800 and go to Las Vegas.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot happens, you know, when you can't see it happening. And all of humanity's problems stem from our inability to sit quietly in a room alone. Okay, investors' highest aspiration should be to buy when the market is falling. That's what they don't do.
That's really my favorite, in the sense that I think if you can buy when everyone else is selling and go in there and pick up their stuff, and the best example of that is what happened last March and April when the Dow was every day down. I mean, there was days where it was down 1,000, 2,000 points. And if you had the nerve, the gumption, whatever the word you want to use is, to go in and buy then you would be very, very, very happy at this time. So that's, to me, is the most important thing. If you can buy when everyone else is selling, or when buy when the market is dropping, I think you'll be very, very happy with the results.
Well, you know, the buy low, sell high is a very easy expression. It's even an expression that's easy to understand intellectually, but almost impossible for a lot of people to execute emotionally.
That's true. And you just mentioned it. It's emotion. It's a lot of different things happening, and you're worried about things getting worse. One of the slides that I use is a recency bias, in the sense that what's happened in the last week or 2 weeks is going to continue on and on. And I think if you can take the emotions out of investing, you'll be very, very successful. But that's something most people can't do.
So, you know, when I think about investing, I see it personally in terms of acquiring assets that you can use to generate a return to support yourself so you don't have to have a job. What do you think of that as a definition?
We work with most people in terms of their retirement. So when they're investing through a 401k or an IRA or something like that, it's more or less so that you're putting away now, so that in 10 years or 20 years and 30 years, when you retire, you'll have something to fall back on. Social Security, for most people, they're not sure. You know, I hate to say don't rely on Social Security, because I give a whole class about that, but that should only be one leg of your retirement future, so to speak. So you want to have Social Security, but you want to have other legs, and having money in an IRA or a 401k is something certainly you want to have built up. So that's kind of where I'm going with my investing. Most of the time when I talk to people about investing, is think of it as a long-term thing. You're not necessarily going to need the money anytime soon, hopefully. So therefore, keep that long-term perspective. Don't worry about the ups and downs so much.
Or maybe invest now so you'll never be in a position where you do actually need the money.
Right, right. Or you can choose to take the money necessarily not because you need it, because you have it and you want it, and it's there for you.
Yeah, and you know, we see the same. I see the same principle so often in real estate investing. You know, when it's done by, you know, just sort of your average person on the street who, you know, wants to pick up a rental property, or in Toronto, for example, probably where you are too, is crazy inflation, right, on these investments. But what's interesting to me is that the people who actually make the most money are those who just buy and hold these things, you know, whatever, you know, regardless of the market, and just figure out how to generate enough income from them. You know, the way I view it is that the rental property should be used to generate enough income so that you can continue to own the property, so that, you know, to carry it while it appreciates through inflation.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if you can get a few extra bucks out of it income-wise, that's okay, I suppose. But I don't see that as the real benefit of a lot of this stuff.
We tend to, again, most of our clients are whether in a 401k plan or have retired from a job and rolled that 401k money over into an IRA or something like that. So they're either on the cusp of retirement or already in retirement. And then, you know, what's the best way for me to take the money out and use it, so it's going to be there for a long time? People's longevity has increased quite a bit, so they're going to need that money. Somebody in their 60s is probably going to need that money for 10 years, 20 years, maybe even longer. So you want to have that long-term horizon, not necessarily worry about the ups and downs so much.
So some of the, you know, I found your presentation was great, but some of the slides really, really stood out as, I think, important lessons. And one of them was, and I picked this, you know, because this is, you know, something I believe in so strong, and I've seen so many people make this mistake, is that, you know, if you were to start in your 20s, you know, thinking about, you know, being a responsible saver and investor, I would add there's a huge difference between savings and investing. And actually, on that note, you were giving me an example before we started the podcast about how, you know, you can accumulate, not, you know, you can accumulate through savings, but that's not the same as investing. You know, perhaps you could describe that situation. You know, we have somebody come to you with a lifetime of savings.
Well, when I started, one of the clients I met, a woman about 4 or 5 years ago, a very, very nice woman, very, very unsophisticated when it comes to finances, wasn't the kind of person to read the Wall Street Journal or watch CNBC or listen to
anything. Do you think that's an advantage, by the way, to long-term success?
Absolutely. And it was certainly in her case, but I think most people, in the sense that they're watching too much TV, there's a lot of good information out there. I think there's a lot of bad information, which is going to lead people to do things that they really shouldn't be doing. We can talk about that a little bit later. But this woman basically had accumulated a very, very large amount of retirement funds. And I asked her, you know, I said, you don't seem to be like the kind of person who's going to watch CNBC or read the Wall Street Journal. You know, you had mentioned that to me. That wasn't really an interest of yours. How were you able to accumulate such a large sum? And she said, Danny, it was really boiled down to two things. Number one, I put away as much as I could each year into my 401k plan, whatever the limit was that year, 10,000, 15,000, 20,000, whatever the limit was, I put in. And I never, ever, ever looked at my brokerage statements. They would come in and I would just toss them right in the mail. And that was the key to her success. And I think that was pretty much, I mean, those are easy steps or easy method to accumulating a lot of money. There's not a lot to that. Most people would have trouble doing those things, but in her, she was very successful just by doing those two things.
It's so that particular, you're describing something that in her case was so incredibly simple. And then you say, well, most people have trouble doing something. So why do you think that is?
Well, the savings part of it is just because people tend to spend more than maybe they should. Driving around in expensive cars and going to Starbucks. I teach a very basic class on, you know, financial fitness. And I said, listen, you know, if you're going to Starbucks every day, $4 or $5 for a coffee or something, I mean, that's an expensive daily habit. You know, maybe that's something you can cut down on, especially if you're not able to save money into an IRA or a 401k or something like that. But I think going back to the statements, the fact that most people want to look at their statements, want to see how they're doing this year, how they're doing with their investments, you know, so they can go talk about it at cocktail parties and things like that. I think that's the hardest thing to do, is for people just to kind of turn away from all that and not look at it on a regular basis. I know I get my statements and sometimes I'm interested in what's going on. So, but for me and even for somebody like me, I'm curious just to see what's going on. So I think people have a general, it would be very hard for somebody to do what this woman did and ignore it completely for many, many many years, not even take a look at it on an annual basis. And she said, no, I never look at my statements.
And that actually, seems to me to be a significant contributor to her success, is to, you know, stay out of the general sort of noise in the financial planning world, which I agree, I think is a huge problem. You know, you get people checking their investments twice, you know, this sort of stuff. I mean, it's completely unhelpful, because one of two things will happen. Either they're going to see they're doing really well and they're going to get upset that they don't have more invested, or they can see they're not doing well and they're going to be upset they have so much invested. So, I mean, it doesn't seem to me that, you know, much good can come from that at all, or nothing's happening. And well, what's the point? Nothing's happening.
You're absolutely right, John. And it's funny because people have, I remember, and we can talk about just different situations that I have with my clients, but I remember a conversation I had with somebody probably about 4 or 5 months ago, this was about this time last year, in the sense that the market had come back a little bit from where it was at the March, April point, but he in his account, he still showed some losses. So he said, wow, you know, I'm down this year. I'm down whatever the amount was. And we had been working together over 10 years. So I thought to myself, well, you've been doing this for 10 years. You know, you shouldn't be looking at this from what's happened this month or this quarter or even this year, but what have you done 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, that kind of thing. So the fact that these people are getting their statements, looking at their statements and comparing it to what happened either in the quarter or year to date is very harmful. They're not looking at it from the long term, just what have I done this year?
Well, another one of your slides, if I'm understanding the slide correctly, was very, very interesting. Am I right in saying that you're in your research, opinion, whatever, that if you were to take any 20-year period, over any 20-year period, that people would not have lost money or would have done reasonably well or something to that effect? In other words, I mean, the point was, look at this over a longer period of time.
Right. That's the point is with that slide is that there's really I should distinguish between the 1 year and the 20 year, but for any 1 year, I think there's about a 50-50 chance that you'll make money or lose money in the stock market, maybe a little bit higher that you'll make money over 1 year, but over 20 years, based on that chart and all my readings or virtually everything I've read says that any 20 years, you will not lose money. You'll have a positive year, 20 year period, you'll have a positive experience with the stock market. So it's just another example of people getting a little too hung up on what's happening short term, 6 months or a year. And if they go through it over long periods of time, they'll be successful. You know, so think
well,
about
that. And that ties in, I think, to another one of the points you make. And this comes back to, you know, I see this as an issue of the investor more than the investment. But the point that you make is that, you know, people are generally much more affected by their losses negatively than they are positively by their gains.
It's been demonstrated that people are, that they feel the losses, that the losses impact them much, much greater than an equivalent gain. And one of the things that I read, there was a study given where people are given the chance to either win $100 outright or lose $1,000, but get kind of $150 as a reward, so to speak. And they would much rather be in the situation where they're only being given $100 rather than the $150 as kind of a consolation prize, because they had a chance to win the $1,000. You know, that was a possibility. So given that, most people would choose, just give me the $100 so I don't have to think about what I lost with the $1,000. So most people, again, for the majority of people, the equivalent loss is going to be much more harmful, psychologically painful, than it would be a gain. Basically, you know, it hurts me a lot more to lose $500 than to win $500.
Yeah, I think that's right. But, you know, to me, this suggests that, I mean, I'm sure that you would agree with me if I were to say that financial literacy needs to be taught in schools starting elementary school. Would you agree with that?
I would agree.
You know, and for some reason, of course, it's not. I have no idea why, but it is not. But if people saw investing as, I think, more of just, you know, a part of life, you know, like reading or eating or just something that is generally just part of life, you know, like having a home or whatever, or a family, then, you know, maybe they'd be able to take a longer term view of it. There's something about our culture where investing has somehow become something that only a certain subclass of people does, right? And the rest of the people don't pay attention to. And, you know, as we, you know, move towards a world where I think there are fewer and fewer private pension plans, etc. And, you know, regardless of the importance of Social Security type plans in the world, I mean, it's still a kind of government dependence. I mean, there's no question about that. You know, it seems to me that, you know, people have got to kind of get it in their DNA right from day one, that this is just part of life. And if they saw it as part of life, then maybe they wouldn't be so focused on it, you know, in terms of the immediate ups and downs and that sort of thing.
I'm afraid, though, that there's so much out there with the media these days and the focus on the short and long, just the short term. And you see it when you watch the CNBCs and everything like that is focused on what happens this day or what's happening short term. And And I think you mentioned the term noise before. It's very, very difficult to tune out the noise, what's going on with, you know, what's happening today. You know, the market was up today 500 points or 300 points or whatever, or what happened a few weeks ago with this new variant of the coronavirus, and everybody is focused on the short term, and that's all you hear about. And it's very difficult, I think, for the average investor to tune out that noise and forget about those kind of things. But if we could kind of gear most people or try to get them away from that short-term thinking, they would be much more successful. But it's just the society that we have, the media culture that we have, everything is, I think, is focused on the short-term, you know, what's happening today.
But this is no different from life in general. I mean, it seems to me that civilizations, individuals, et cetera, they tend to prosper if they think long-term. And if they don't think long-term, all kinds of things go haywire.
Right, and they don't plan. And I see that with a lot of people in the sense that they maybe are putting money away in a bank account, but they're not investing it. So they're really only doing half the job. When I see a young person, especially we work with 401k plans, as I mentioned, and we see constantly seeing young people just putting money away. So they're doing, which is fine, but they're not investing that. So they're getting very low returns. And at a young person's age, with lots of time to go, lots of human capital is a term that I use in my presentation, in the sense that their earning power is very high. They should be investing in a very aggressive manner, in the sense that even if the market goes down, they're in a better position. Everything is going to be buying more shares at better prices. So that to me is, if we can get our young people to kind of think a little differently when it comes to investing in the stock market, that would go a long way to helping them in the future.
I wonder if a lot of this isn't perhaps linked to language, right? You know, we talk about this as, if we talk about it as retirement or something like that, it seems to me that, and reasonably, justifiably, goes over the head of a lot of people. You know, I mean, for many of them, they're, from their perception, a million years away from it. And there's the others who don't think they're going to retire at all. So, you know, if you call it retirement prep, I think it sort of misses the point. You know, there needs to be another word for this, okay?
Okay.
What do you think the word would be? I mean, what do you think this is about? I mean, I think, yes, of course, it would include retirement, right? But it's way more than that. You would agree?
Absolutely.
So what would be a word that could be used to describe this? Freedom, responsibility, independence,
security, maybe
security.
It's funny you mentioned that, because one of the there's a lot of financial coaches out there who talk to people like me about how to talk to their clients about money, and one of the advisors or one of the coaches that I have seen some of his stuff over the last few years, I won't mention him. But he mentions one of the things you want to do to talk to people is, how do they think about money? Do they think about money as a means of financial independence, freedom, security, buying things like that? So maybe we should get away from retirement and more just think about money as a means to security or being financially independent, as you said, being able to do things that you want to do without having to worry about it. And maybe if you thought about money in those terms, rather than just retirement, people would be a little bit more apt to save, to get involved, that kind of thing. So get away.
I think they probably would. But, you know, it's funny. If you look, for example, at, say, the growth of the real estate market in the last decade or so, and, you know, one, at least, you know, in Toronto from my vantage point, right? I mean, I often hear people talk about, well, people are in two categories, you know, those who own a house and those who don't own a house, you know, this sort of thing. Well, maybe. But couldn't that be viewed as a specific example of people are really in two categories, those who think responsibly about money and finance and those who don't?
Right. And a lot of people don't, because they just don't think they're going to get to that point where they'll have extra money, or that at a young age, you know, you're not really thinking about what's going to happen in 10 years.
Or they think it requires, you know, sort of a special expertise, even though, you know, what we see time and time again is that you know, trying to do too much with that expertise can often derail your growth.
Right. Now, I when we mentioned that the story about the woman, again, not of a sophisticated woman, but how successful she was, and really only boils down to a few things. You know, you want to control some of your urges, not necessarily, you know, try to time the market, put away as much as you can. I think you can be a successful investor and not necessarily be somebody who's in the financial world, you know, by following some basic steps. And maybe we should try to stress those steps at an early age, and less about, you know, what's going on with the market specifically.
Maybe it should be thought of as something more analogous to, you know, so you wake up in the morning and brush your teeth. You know, I mean, you just sort of maintain these, you know, decent habits, like you don't spend all the, you know, you try to live below your means. Doesn't mean that you live in an impoverished way, but I mean, just because you can go out and buy a car for $100,000 certainly doesn't mean you should.
No, and it's really just daily habits, you know, setting daily habits, saving a few dollars each day, not watching the CNBCs of the world and things like that. And one of the things that I have in my presentation is a kind of a way to reduce the bad habits is to set goals, you know. So set goals, try to maintain those goals. Set a goal of saying $50 a month or $100 a month. If you're watching a lot of CNBC or you're checking your account balance online every day, maybe set a goal to do it once a week or once a month, things like that. So I think if you can set some daily goals, it'll go a long way for you in terms of saving for financial security, saving for independent security, if you don't want to use the retirement term.
Well, yeah, and you know, and of course, and understand that, you know, we are at least for the foreseeable future in a market-driven economy, which means that, you know, businesses are going to be making money, and the way to participate that is to you know, invest in shares in those companies, you know, et cetera.
Right, and we're big fans of index funds, so you're really just making a decision. I'm not going to try to pick that best, the next Apple or Microsoft or something like that. We're just going to buy index funds, which cover a wide range of stocks. The S&P 500 is probably the best example of something that we use quite often. And you're buying, you're saying, listen, I don't know what the best is, or I don't know what the best sector is, but I'm going to have a broad representation of the U.S. economy, those 500 top in terms of market capitalization, the highest. And I think that's a great place to start. Nothing too sophisticated about that strategy, but if that's kind of the, if you can build a portfolio around the S&P 500, some of the other indices, I think that's a great place to start.
Well, absolutely. You know, again, though, I think it's too simple for people. You know, you're a fee-based financial planner.
I'm a fee-based, but we do some commission-based products. So I'm not one of these people who says I'm only fee-based. Mm-hmm. But that's where most of our, in terms of when we invest with people, that's pretty much most, I would say 90% of the time, that's the direction that we're going to use.
Do you find that, you know, with sort of all the proliferation of all this stuff that's online, do you find that it makes people more reluctant to sort of pay for advice?
I think most people know that there's things that they can't do on their own, that they're better off paying an advisor. I'll use my own, you know, experience. I'm not very good with fixing things around the house. That's not my forte. I don't like doing that kind of stuff. So to me, if I have a window that needs replacing or whatever, I'm just going to come in and say, listen, this is the kind of thing that you do. I trust you to do a good job, whatever it costs. And the person that I use always does a good job. So I think that there are areas where if you want to do it, that's fine. But if you don't, and especially with money, you better be careful, because it's not something really you want to make mistakes. I think it's worth hiring somebody. Don't forget that advisor should be doing other things for you, not just investing, helping you invest, but maybe looking at things from a tax perspective, an overall financial planning perspective. So I think when you're talking about a fee-based arrangement, it's not really just for the investments. It's there should be other things involved in that relationship.
Well, I think that, you know, to a certain extent, you know, psychological coaching on this, right? I mean, you know, what is it exactly we're trying to achieve here?
And a good advisor is going to help that person, help them hold their hand, so to speak, when things are really dangerous out there. The best example of that being what happened back in March and April. If you were jumping in and out of the market, that hurts you. I mean, that has a tremendous long-term effect if you still haven't come back in the market after what's happened. So that advisor should be helping you at least stay in and maybe giving you a little push to say, hey, now maybe's the time to be some buying and to do some buying as well.
Yeah, clearly. Okay, so there's another great discussion. What if I were to ask you to identify, say, three pieces of advice, okay? Imagine that, it's the last days of your career as an advisor, as a life advisor, life coach, which is really what you're doing here. And if you said, I would like to get three pieces of advice from Dan, what would they be?
Well, one of the things I think people make a big mistake when it comes to investing is expecting maybe things that are a little unreasonable. The stock market has historically returned about 7 or 8% per year, somewhere in that range. That doesn't mean goes up 7 or 8% each year. It means sometimes we have good years and sometimes we have bad years. So I would tell anyone who's investing is to keep those expectations, manage those expectations, keep them reasonable. You're going to have some good years, you're going to have some bad years. But again, think about it as a long-term journey. And every year you're going to have some up, every once in a while, you're going to have a bad year like we had a few years ago, every couple of years. You have to expect a correction. I like to tell my clients a correction is a 10% drop. Historically, we have one of those every other year. So just to manage those expectations, expect a correction, a bear market every once in a while. You have to be in it to win it, as you mentioned, and you have to limit your expectations or keep these things in mind. You're going to have a bad year every once in a while. That doesn't mean you jump ship. That doesn't mean you do things differently. Just manage those expectations. So that would be an important thing. We always tell our clients that. The second thing I think is that there are things that you can control in life and that things you can't control in life. You can control your saving, your habits, looking at the statements, things like that. You can't control the stock market. So don't lose any sleep over where the market's going or what's going to happen. You can't control the stock market, but you can control your savings. Again, how much you're putting into that 401k, how much you're putting into that IRA, and control your urges too. Don't look at your statements. Don't get into some bad habits. And the last thing is just keep a long-term time horizon. To me, that's the most important thing. Invest for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Keep a long-term time horizon. Don't worry about the daily ups and downs. Say to yourself, you know what? I don't need this money for 10 years or 20 years, or I don't need this money at all. This money is for my children or my grandchildren. It's a legacy for them. So keep that long-term time horizon. I think if you can do those three things, you'll be okay going forward when it comes to
I think that's great advice. I really do. But if you were to say to me now, so could you summarize that in one sentence instead of three? I think what you're really saying is that investing in financial planning is a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. It's an attitude. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, you certainly want to do things and avoid things. So yeah, it's a lifestyle. I like that.
That's interesting. As we come to an end for today, as well as giving people your coordinates, any final thoughts on this, which on one level is an amazingly complicated area from a technical perspective, but really, is managed by, I think, some simple life habits, right?
Life habits, lifestyle, attitudes, absolutely. Just urges, different things that you control. Again, it shouldn't be something that you get intimidated about or think that you can't do or you need some kind of expertise. It's really just a question of behavior. As you mentioned at the beginning, I think it's very important to stress it's behavior or habits. That's more than anything else is going to determine whether or not you're successful.
Yeah. Well said. All right. And you can be reached at AmericanPortfolios.com.
Well, actually, it's American Portfolios is my broker-dealer. So the best thing to do if you want to reach me is my website. It's very simple. It's danmazzola.com, and that's danmazzola.com. That's the best way to reach me. If you can look on my website, it'll have my telephone number, my email address, all that other information you need to contact me is right through the website.
And it does work because that's how I contacted Dan. Phone number's right there. Anyway, that's great. I really appreciate your having this conversation today and engaging in this. And again, for Americans abroad or the people who primarily listen to this, okay, do not buy into the idea that because of U.S. taxation, you're somehow disabled from responsible financial planning. You are not. There may be more considerations, but if you buy into that, you're going to end up doing nothing and getting nothing. And that is not an acceptable outcome. All right, Dan, thanks so much for today. And I hope to pick this up with you again with yet another topic. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, John. My pleasure. Thank you very much.